I look all around me, don't see anything I know. I'd like to answer you, but I can't clarify if I'm 100 miles ahead or 100 miles behind. I've seen signs of trouble, but I don't know what to think. I don't want to rock the boat or let it slowly sink. I'd ask you questions, but I don't want to make you cry. Am I 100 miles ahead or 100 miles behind? It's gonna rain, it's gonna pour through sickness and worse. Can I?
Katie Curtis in our Washington, D.C. studio for Capital Americana. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
That song, 100 Miles, I remember originally hearing that on Crash Course for Roses back in 1999. Was that about when you wrote it?
Yes. I thought you were going to say you heard it in a Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movie, because that version from A Crash Course in Roses was in one of their movies. It's called Our Lips Are Sealed is the movie. And I only know this because my kids, who are 6 and 8, just happened to rent it from the library, and I'd forgotten that it was in there. And then it came on in the middle of their Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movie.
Wow. Yeah, your music has been featured in a lot of video and movies over the years. How did you get kind of hooked up with music syncing rights and all that stuff?
I don't know, because, you know, I live in Boston. I'm as far away as you can get to L.A., and I have no idea how they find it, and I'm very happy that it has ended up in, like, Grey's Anatomy, Dawson's Creek. And But it's just been luck, you know, having someone who's a fan who works on the show and various shows. So,
yeah.
So far, it's been, you know, just fluky.
Well, that song is also on your most recent album on Compass Records, Hello Stranger, and it's a totally different version of it. And I was wondering if you could explain, and even just now hearing it in the studio, it sounds very different to my ears, different suspensions and chords that you throw in there. How does a song change for you personally over the course of 10 plus years?
Well, often when I first write it, you know, I'm so emotionally connected to it. Like, you'll notice that original version on Crash Course in Roses, it's very ethereal sounding and it's very moody. And as I've gone along, like in this case, this song has taken on more of an edge for me because, you know, I first wrote it about the commitment to be married to someone, and then, you know, or to be in a committed relationship. And then now having kids, it's, you know, the question, you know, can I carry you? Can I love that well, you know, through sickness and hell? Like, it's really a serious, serious thing. And it had, to me, I need a little more drive behind it. It's no longer this kind of floaty, gee whiz, I wonder if we can, you know, make it work. It's like, you know, we better dig in here. And I think the bluegrass version or the string band version that's on Hello Stranger has more of that vibe to it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It used to sound very someday.
Yeah.
And now it sounds very immediate, which I think for fans of your music, myself included, I have gone on that journey. And 10 mm-hmm. years ago, the thought of marriage was kind of scary. And
right.
Now it seems a little more immediate and right. realistic. So, but that is only one album that you put out with Compass Records. You've been within since around 2006.
That's right. I put out one called Long Night Moon and Sweet Life.
Mm-hmm. And you've been working with producer Gary West on all of those?
Yeah, on all of them.
It's interesting. I found an old quote from you saying that I'd never want to work with the same producer twice. I always want a new producer. What is it about Gary that has made you want to go back so many times?
Well, I just remembered it. Lauren Entress did produce Long Night Moon, but I've worked with Gary twice and I'm planning to work with him for a third time. So mm-hmm. you are right. And I think it's because he makes himself kind of not invisible, but it's not about him. It's really like he's there, but while he's there, he's I feel like he's there in support of what I want, you know? And so I feel like he's the kind of producer who lets me produce, and yet he won't let me do anything stupid. So I which I've tried to do. So I really work well with him, and I feel like it, you know, we keep coming up with ideas of how we want each record to sound different. And in doing that, I feel like excited to work with him. And he's very hooked up in Nashville. And since he's the owner of my label, it's very convenient to just go. I just go there. They have a great studio there. And I really enjoy working there.
You're right. He is very hooked up. You had some wonderful, I don't want to say the word sidemen on this last project because that just diminishes. Alison Brown playing the banjo, Stuart Duncan on fiddle, and Daryl Scott.
Yeah. And George Marinelli, who plays with Bonnie Raitt. And, you know, it's just really great players who are also kind of like, they're not trying to impose their vibe on anybody. They're just having fun and listening to the song and trying to serve the song, which, of course, it's a gift when someone can both be amazing and also do that, be sort of invisible.
Have you already talked with him about the direction of the next album? Are you going to be a little more like the Hello Stranger with kind of string band feel, or are you going to go back to more of a pop produced sound?
Like we're not doing the string band thing again. That was kind of a side project. Mm-hmm. In this new record, it'll be kind of like my past work, but I each time it just turns out different, and I think we're gonna go for you know, a kind of stripped down, you know, when it sounds like almost nothing's going on but there's a lot going on. That's the idea for the next one.
Excellent. Will you play us a tune that might be on that album?
Sure. I'm gonna play you, this is sort of a light one because 100 miles is kind of heavy. This is a song I just got inspired to write recently after I was on my way to what I call a bad gig. And you know, a regular gig is when it's still possible that someone might be standing outside before the gig, look at me loading in and say, do you know who's playing tonight? And I'll say, yeah, Katie Curtis. She's awesome. And a bad gig is when someone who is actually at the gig, amongst all people not listening, comes up to me after the gig and says, do you know who just played? And in that case, I say, I have no idea. So this was a song that I wrote on the way to a bad gig. Stretch limousine on fire, I saw it on the 405. Traffic's backed up, baby, but everyone got out alive. Stretch limousine on fire, everybody has those days, even when they got it good. Oh. I got a gig downtown tonight at the hotel cafe. Big crowds lined up for the band before me, but I know their fans won't stay. Maybe some of their guys from the label will be hanging in the back. I'll be playing my songs from the heart while they drink and chat. Stretch limousine on fire, I saw it from up on the hill. The traffic's back up, baby, I gotta say it gave me chills. Stretch limousine on fire here in Hollywood. I guess everybody has those days, even when they got it good. Oh, trying to sleep in my hotel room, but there is too much noise outside. Walls, thin, scratchy sheets, and I just might cry. How come the rich just keep on getting richer while the rest of us are paying the dues? Well, I try to keep the faith, but when I get the blues, I think of that stretched limousine on fire. Flames burning high. Trouble comes to everyone. What you can buy, stretch limousine on fire here in Hollywood. I guess it's really just a small thing, but it made me feel so good.
Is that one called Stretch Limousine on Fire?
I think so.
That's great. That I like the slight blues tinge to it. That's a lot of fun. I noticed on that one you used a flat pick, and before you were finger picking and using a thumb pick. How did you learn to play guitar?
I taught myself for the most part. And, you know, I always like playing with no picks at all when I'm writing and just my fingers. And it's so wonderful. And I think when I get on stage, I'm going to do that. But then you get on stage, and if you've ever performed, it's like you want the, I like the definition of a pick, you know. And so I've had to learn to be adept with the flat pick and the thumb pick. But I don't like those little metal finger picks.
That you might use on a banjo.
That you would use, if you were more of a bluegrass player.
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely gives you a different variation on your sound, and you can kind of play around with your fingers and getting a harder sound to it. You said you're self-taught in the guitar, but I've read the story several times about how someone gave you your first guitar.
Right.
And how old were you when that happened?
I was 15.
Okay. So not one of these Nashville kids who gets it at four.
No. I mean, I didn't get signed to EMI, my first big record deal, till I was 30. And, you know, it's been like, I just feel like it gives you a chance to just grow into it. And I continue to grow into this, you know, as my life evolves, my writing evolves. And, you know, I think that kind of freedom is nice. You know, I feel sorry for those people who have those big hits, you know, in their 20s. And it's trouble.
And then you have to figure
out
keep
playing, that's all.
What's next. Well, I did want to ask you about, you have a charity kind of endowment set up to give guitars to people. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's called Aspire to Inspire, and it's about giving guitars to kids. And we've given a bunch away through the Fresh Air Fund in New York City.
Okay. And how does that work if someone's listening and wants to donate, or if they have children who are in need of guitars?
Yes. Well, it's through Hope Equity,
hopeequity.org.
And so if you go there and you search Katie Curtis, Aspire to Inspire, you'll find the fund. And the endowment provides a few hundred dollars. Right now, you know, there's enough in there so that we can buy like five guitars once a year for, you know, so it's not like this huge thing yet, but it's but it's going to continue forever because it's an endowment and it's growing.
What kind of guitar are you playing right now?
This is a Martin 00028.
Okay, and I noticed it has a little signature on it. Is it the signature model?
This is an Eric Clapton signature model.
I see.
Yes.
It's got a nice folk body shape to it.
Yeah.
Do you ever play
body.
Around with dreadnoughts? Or?
I used to, and then I just started gravitating toward the small body and the sound that it gives me.
Wonderful.
I don't know how far your listeners can hear this, but I'm playing in Easton, Maryland on Sunday night, the, well, let's see,
24th. Yeah, so that's your next gig. Actually, that's why you're in town for the you're coming through and on your way to Easton on the 24th. I see at the Nightcat. And then you've got some dates in North Carolina. We do have a good number of people who listen from North Carolina on their computers. Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about your North Carolina stint. Where are you going to be?
Well, I'll be in Asheville and Charlotte and Durham.
And you do all those solo?
Yes, although I have a woman who will be playing, singing, and a friend of mine is coming in singing some harmonies, and she is amazing. Her name is Jenna Linbo, and she's from Asheville. So she will sing on some stuff, and she's opening a couple of those gigs. But mainly, if people want to know what's going on, they could just, you know, check out my website, which is just katiecurtis.com, and then you can find out about all the gigs.
And that's C-A-T-I-E. C-U-R-T-I-S, but I'll have a link up on the Capital Americana website so people can see that. We're also hoping to get a video of one of the songs you're going to play today, so go ahead and check the website for that. Go to bluegrasscountry.org and click on Programs, then Capital Americana. I'll have all the information there. So you travel mainly by yourself. I didn't see any shows listed with a full band. How do you deal with all those hours by yourself in the car?
I find that as long as I go home every 4 or 5 days, which I do, I can handle just about anything. And I enjoy podcasts and I enjoy music and I enjoy the quiet time because, you know, I do have little kids at home.
So where is home for you?
Just outside of Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay. So you mainly then, I guess, are touring mainly on the East Coast, or you still get on the West Coast?
No, I tour throughout the country, and I just fly to an area and then drive around for, you know, 5 to 10 days. And but I'm probably home 20 days a month, and I'm on the road about 10 days a month. And, you know, I've been making a living this way for about 15 years. So
that's wonderful.
It works, and it's, you know, this is the wonderful thing about playing solo is you can just, you know, decide your own schedule and pop in and pop out of people's lives quite easily.
When you're in the car and you're listening to music, has anything really caught your ear these days? Do you listen to music as inspiration for new material, or is it just to keep your mind occupied? Or
I really enjoy Brett Denon. I think his writing is outstanding. And I've always enjoyed the Weepies.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, I find it easier. I like to listen, and I get probably more inspired as a songwriter listening to This American Life and listening to the stories that are told. You know, they inspire songs, I think, even more than other songs inspire songs.
Do you have a song that's specifically inspired by This American Life?
No.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I probably do, but it's not as direct as that. However, I have a song that's inspired by a dream. Should I play it?
That sounds wonderful.
All right. Please, won't you let us in? Just make this one exception. I know you're trying to close. She opens up the door a crack. Says, hey, there's a table in back. I can't believe I get this time. After hours with this friend of mine. So we walk right in. You don't need your cane or medicine. Just your body how it used to be. It's so good to see you smile and wearing something just your style. I never thought I'd get this time. After hours with this friend of mine. Oh, it's just not fair. You were so young and we will never forget you. Dessert, you
I'd spill it on my shirt. We laughed till the chairs went up on tables. Thank you for coming down. Do you know how I miss you now? And I just wish it didn't have to end. I wish it wasn't just a dream again. So young, and we will never forget you. Please let us in, just make this one exception.
Katie Curtis in studio here on Capital Americana. What was the name of that song?
After Hours.
After Hours. Wonderful. And that is that going to be on the next album?
Yes, it will.
And you said it was inspired by a dream. How do you take something as amorphous as a dream and put it into a song? Well, I mean, is it that exactly how it happened in the dream?
I try to write down my dreams because I think the kinds of images that appear in your dreams are like lyrical song images, because it's this abstract connection that we make somewhere in our brains between visual images and feelings. And so I always write, I try to write down the dreams when I wake up. And so I went back and I was looking back at dreams from earlier in the year, and I saw that I had dreamed that my friend Reeve and I got kind of like snuck in to a restaurant after hours, and she passed away a year ago. And it was like, it was this secret that you could do that, like you could visit each other somehow if you only could sneak in after hours, you know. And I don't know how, it just felt like, wow, I didn't know we could do this, and we had this great visit in my dream. So it was very much like literally like the song. Yeah.
I saw on your website also that you do songwriting workshops.
Mm-hmm.
You gave it a cute little name, Oopsie to Artsy.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that, and where have you done a few songwriting workshops?
Right. Well, first of all, Oopsie to Artsy is sort of like my philosophy of life, which is, you know, things present themselves in your life, and it's your opportunity to make art. You know, whatever happens, when you start thinking of life that way, that, you know, things aren't necessarily supposed to happen in a certain way. But if you can take whatever does happen and whatever's, you know, evolving in front of you and turn it into art and make meaning out of it, then your life will have meaning. So I feel like that's, you know, it's a bigger picture thing for me. But as a writer, that's how it goes, because, you know, you see something and you don't know why it catches your eye or why it's right before you. But as a songwriter, if you can take that image, like the stretch limousine on fire, you know, I was really irritated about this gig I had to play. And I felt like that visual image, to me, it was like it saved the whole night for me, because I was able to make a statement about, you know, wealth and our society. And, you know, so it's something I've turned into a workshop, and I've done it at the Swannanoa Gathering, which I'll be doing again this summer, I think, which is, it's in North Carolina, at Warren Wilson College. It's a retreat for adults, mostly. I mean, you can actually go as a teenager too. There was one 11-year-old writer who was great that was there this summer.
So do you come from the perspective of working on the written word, the poetry first, and then kind of come up with a chord structure to go with it? Or do you just kind of vamp and then try and sing what you're feeling?
Yeah, I'm a vamper. I'm a vamper and let it spill, you know. And it's all about recognizing when it's an interesting melodic phrase or like an interesting chord change, and it gets you, you know, emotionally. And then you just have to recognize that and say, okay, I'm saving this, and I'm going to try to push, you know, further with this idea.
And do you just play it over and over until you remember, or do you record something?
Yes, can you imagine how irritating this is for my family? I have a studio now, which is great. It's a freestanding studio building in the back of behind my house. Thank God, because, yeah, I just play it over and over, and I don't get tired. I just, like, keep – it's like I get a running start, and I try to figure out what the next line organically wants to be, and it takes a long time.
Do you usually write a whole song in one setting, or do you come back and visit it?
I always come back and visit it, but I will often get a draft, you know, in the first day. I don't know, first sitting, but I'll try to frame it out like the frame of a house, you know, you kind of figure out where it's going. And then I always come back. I can't write it. I mean, there have been a few songs that just came out whole, but it's unusual.
Yeah. That always seems so amazing to me when people just say, oh, it just popped out like that.
Yeah.
It's good to hear you say that it's a more real process.
Yeah, right.
You know, that anybody can kind of, you know, figure out where the art is if you just keep playing it over and over and
That's
over
how
again.
I feel. I think so.
Wonderful. Well, would you like to play us another song?
Sure. You know what? Maybe I'll play an older song of mine that's I wrote with Mark Arelli.
Oh, yes.
And this song is called Passing Through. We are passing this world on to our kids. From the day when they climb from their cribs, we'll try to teach them well. Show them that they're loved, but in the end all we can do is hope our best was good enough. 'Cause they'll witness how this life can be so beautiful and cruel. We can't shelter them forever, but if we show them all the tools, they might leave this world in a little better shape than me and you. We are only passing through. Passing through, passing through. We are only passing through. Passing through, passing through. We are only passing through. We are watching this world from our living room. 40 years since we walked on the moon. Well, this big blue ball is shrinking. I don't know if that's good, but for better or for worse, now this whole world is our neighborhood. And there's no place left to run to stay above the fray. We better learn to get along, not just to get our way. Not only for each other, but our children's children too. We are only passing through, passing through, passing through. We are only passing through, passing through, passing through. Sometimes what will I pass on? How much can one voice do with just a song? Sometimes injustice and indifference are all that I see, but I refuse to let my hope become the latest casualty. So I'll sing of love and truth and try to practice what I preach. If I can't change the world, I'll change the world within my reach. What better place to start than here and now with me and you? We are only passing through, passing through, passing through. We are only passing through, passing through. Passing through, we are only passing through, we are only passing through.
Passing Through from Katie Curtis here live in our studio in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for playing that. Did you have kids when you wrote that with Mark?
Yes, and Mark didn't. Now, Mark Arelli has a couple kids, but when he brought this to me, I had kids, and his first line was, "We are passing this world on to our kids, the ones with rings in their noses and eyelids." And it was sort of like this cynical song from the perspective of an older person who doesn't like the new generation. And mm-hmm. And I persuaded him to try to think of it really as like, these are our kids and this is you and me. This isn't, you know, this isn't someone just being crotchety. This is actually like people looking with humility at, you know, what we're leaving to the next generation and how kind of frightening that might be for them. And then he really took it and ran with it. And he ended up writing a lot of this song.
You've written other tunes with him, though, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. We wrote People Look Around, mm-hmm. which was about Hurricane Katrina.
And then that won the International Songwriting Prize. And that was in 2005?
Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, 2005 or 6, it won the grand prize, yep.
Yeah, and there's an outrageous number of entries. I know it's in the tens of thousands. I don't remember exactly how many, but that's definitely...
Who's counting?
Well, I'm sure there's many YouTubes of that song, actually, if you guys want to check it out, People Look Around. But I noticed one of the YouTube videos that I saw of that song, you actually played with a loop box on stage.
Right.
What brought you to that, and how does that enhance what you're doing during a solo show?
Well, since I play solo, it's really nice for me to create more textures on stage. And since I started out a drummer, I've got pretty good rhythm, so I'm pretty good with that looping situation. And it's just fun. I do it occasionally. I do a vocal loop as well, and it just kind of spices things up for me and to throw that into the show now and then.
But both of those tunes are extremely positive. I often talk with songwriters and they say, it's really hard to write a happy song. It's a lot easier to write about pain and things that you're struggling with. Do you find that to be the case? Because so many of your songs are very positive.
Well, I don't know how it is for other people, but for me, I know that I love to play music and I want to perform these songs over and over. And it would be really difficult for me to write negative songs, I guess, whatever you want to call them, cynical or angry. And if I had a catalog, I mean, I have a few of those songs, but if I had a catalog full of them, it would be very difficult to go out on the road and play them and kind of keep spreading that you know, that message. Because I feel like, you know, shows, when it comes down to it, shows should be fun and entertaining. And, you know, there's a lot of laughing in my shows, and there's a poking fun of politicians, and there's a lot of serious material. But I think, you know, for me, if it was, if I didn't have an overall like message of compassion and humor and hopefully positivity, I think it would be just hard to keep going. Yeah. Those long drives in the car would definitely get me then.
One of the very positive thing that I saw on your website most recently was a video you did with your partner Liz for the It Gets Better project.
Yes, we did.
Tell me a little bit about that project. Our listeners might not have heard of it.
Sure. The writer Dan Savage and his partner responded to the recent rash of teen suicides and the issues around bullying, people who are different, by making a video explaining for younger people or for anybody who's having a hard time that it's possible for your, you know, if you're just coming out or you're like, you're in high school and you're different than everyone else, that it will get better for you as you get older. And so now there are thousands of these videos of people just, you know, people who just posted on YouTube their own stories of how it's gotten better especially since being in school. And I think for gay kids, it's pretty difficult to be in middle school or high school. And so Liz and I made our own video and talked about some of the thoughts we had on that topic. And if anyone wants to see that, you know, you can go again to my website and link to it from there. And, you know, we were happy to share our story because we are invested in the, you know, continued growth of sort of understanding and the young people in this country seem to understand better and better that, you know, love is love. And I want that to be the world my kids inherit because, you know, they're going to have two moms and they have two moms. And I don't want it to be difficult for them.
The most touching thing to me when I watched that video was your quote. You said, to love and be loved, those are the greatest joys of life. I almost started crying when I was watching it at that point. Do you have a love song you can take us out
with? Absolutely. I'm going to play Magnolia Street. I need to tune for this.
For all those technical dorks out there, what tuning did you just put yourself in?
Oh, I just used a partial capo, and I put it on strings 2, 3, and 4 on the 2nd fret, which means that I'm sort of like in an open. It's like an open G tuning if you were capoed on the 2nd fret, or in absolute terms, it's an open A tuning.
Thanks.
This is called Magnolia Street. I knew that I loved you the first time you got into my car. Your cheeks were flushed and I felt a hush come over me in the dark. Got us lost, but at the next cross, you said, I don't care where we are, I'm in the right car. I drove a slow down a fast food strip and you turned the radio on. I was confused, all the signs were lit. You said, I love this song. I wanted to say that I loved you, but I knew too soon, too strong. This is the ride I'm on. This is the ride I'm on. I recall in my sleep how you changed my life on Magnolia Street. A dream, but it's true. I am not the same since I met you, and I feel like I'm going home. No. To the one I've known. I knew that I loved you when we were flying home in the dark. Your hand on the wheel while I was trying to take my jacket off. My foot on the gas, your eyes fast to the road ahead of us. I never felt such trust. I recall in my sleep how you changed my life on Magnolia Street. A dream, but it's true. I am not the same since I met you. Cheeks were flushed and I felt a hush come over me in the dark. You wake me up warm from sleep and you take me in your arms. This is the ride I'm on. This is the ride I want. I recall so complete how you changed my life on Magnolia Street. A dream, but it's true. I am not the same since I met you, and I feel like I'm going home. Not to the one I've known. Hey,
Katie Curtis here in the studio. She's been my guest for the past, I don't know, half hour or so. She's been my guest today on Capital Americana. She'll be playing on Sunday the 24th in Easton, Maryland at the Nightcat, and in Durham, North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, and Charlotte, North Carolina coming up next week. You can check it all out at katiecurtis.com. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Jen.